On the show today, we have Deep Future Analytics' very own Dr. Joseph Breeden talking about COVID-19 recession scenarios and the impact on borrowers and lenders. A fascinating, fascinating talk. You got to check this one out. Hey, everybody. Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, reporting from his New Mexico yard, Dr. Joseph Breeden from Deep Future Analytics. Joseph, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I love your backdrop. That is absolutely beautiful. So thank you for doing this interview outside.
Well, you know, if I get to work from home, I might as well enjoy it, right?
That's right. That's right. Take advantage of it for sure. Hey, before we get started into the topic at hand, I'm asking people, how are things going in your neck of the woods? And you, obviously, you're living in New Mexico. How are things going on in that state?
It's better than most, to be honest. And the reason it's better than most is that I have a feeling that our government and our people remember swine flu. The schools were closed for swine flu because it really raged here. And so it's been almost 3 weeks since they closed schools and non-essential things. And so that was done at a point where we had only like 10 cases in the state.
Wow.
So very, very proactive.
Yeah. Good for you guys.
Now we're doing thing, and it will continue, but the spread is much slower than other places. That's what you have to do.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you can be proactive and catch it early, that's the thing to do for sure. Hey, the topic at hand here is coronavirus recession scenarios and the impact on borrowers and lenders. So can you give us a couple of scenarios that are sparked by this crisis that you're seeing?
Yeah, well, and I should probably give some background that this is a new thing for us since the last time we talked.
Yeah.
That we knew our clients needed economic scenarios, and some of the traditional avenues are just very expensive, and we've got a lot of credit union clients who can't go there. I understand that. So we developed a new service using deep learning neural networks, ensembles of these, which means lots of them working together, to generate scenarios. And so what we do is say, well, if GDP and unemployment do this, what, based on experience, the neural network's experience, will everything else do? And it does a good job, you know, as a machine learning method, it
right.
generates plausible scenarios. And so that's what we're providing to clients. And so the short answer is, we tried three things. I have friends in China who were reporting to me back in January what life was like under lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew it was coming.
Right.
And we created our first economic scenario back at the end of January. And that one, it would be fair to call a mild recession scenario. Mm-hmm. We figured there would be a mild recession at that time because to be frank, I didn't know the hospitals would be so overwhelmed. I didn't realize that we always run these hospitals at almost capacity and they couldn't handle the wave of cases.
Right.
So that mild recession scenario, we put that together based on my own experiences with SARS.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with banks in Hong Kong through the SARS recession and retrospectively afterward doing some modeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, you know, it's going to be worse than SARS because of supply chain disruptions, but maybe it lasts for a quarter or two and then we get a strong rebound. And so, well, that was assuming that this was going to sweep across the country and burn itself out.
Right.
That is not the path because, you know, again, didn't realize at that back in January what it was going to mean to the hospitals. So in February, we put out a new scenario that said, we see the hospital situation. We see that it's not enough just to protect those at risk. We've got to slow it down overall. And the consequence of slowing it down is protracted economic impact because we have to maintain these restrictions longer. So
right.
then we develop an adverse scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And the adverse scenario was 2 quarters of strong GDP decline, significant unemployment, et cetera. But still a strong rebound by Q3 or Q4. But I have to say that that still may be a little on the optimistic side, because we've had to extend this so much, slow things down so much, and we have to be prepared for multiple waves. That some things that we can learn by looking at other countries. Hong Kong is already in the second wave mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. They were very aggressive in the beginning. They had 150 cases roughly, but they did tracing, they did extensive testing, and they managed to extinguish it. They relaxed restrictions and it came back. Within just 2 weeks, it came back for another 150 cases. So they've gone back to their highly restricted situation. And honestly, that's most likely our future. This won't be a single wave, it'll be a multi-wave thing. Mm-hmm. Also, wouldn't it be great if it acted like the flu and summertime weather like this? It's beautiful weather today. If that had an impact. Unfortunately, if you look at places like Australia, they, in the last 3 weeks, they've gone from 70 cases to something around 4,000. I didn't check today. And, you know, people like to look at Singapore and say, see what warm weather does, they're on the equator, but that's not it. Singapore is very proactive on testing, on tracing. It's just a totally different society. Mm-hmm. So we can't use Singapore as an example, unfortunately. At this point, there's no indication of it. So our severe scenario says, well, if we have to at least do this in waves, and we have to be aware of what else is at risk. I think it's become obvious that commercial lending is at risk, especially commercial real estate, mm-hmm. the strip malls, all these things. Now, the Fed is aware of this. The Fed is buying securitizations of commercial loans, that sort of thing. They're going to be proactive to try to prevent the kind of failure that we had in the mortgage crisis. But it's a big thing to work with, because
no doubt.
Just C&I loans, we've got 50% more now than we did in the peak before the last recession. And then add to that CRE and other things. We're highly leveraged. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of risk. And so if you said, if we can't stop that entirely and this goes on for a while, that's when you get to saying GDP could decline 5% this year, unemployment could get between 15 and 20% for an extended period of time. So we have rolled out these scenarios, but hardest of all is when the banks say, gee, I run that severe recession scenario and it's devastating, right? Mm-hmm. And I get that. And what the government is doing won't stop GDP from declining, and it won't stop unemployment from rising. A little bit, you know, some of it's designed to do those things, but mm-hmm. not entirely. Mm-hmm. It means that a lot of what they're doing is post-unemployment, post-decline. And so I wrote an article, newsletter, posted on LinkedIn, which said, why your stress test model will overpredict losses. And basically, your model can't know these government policies right now. Mm-hmm. It just sees the past, and it sees in the past that if we had, I mean, this isn't in the data, but if in the data you had gone from 3.5% unemployment to 8% unemployment, then 12 and 16 over the course of a few months, that would be devastating, and mm-hmm. you'd have huge bank losses.
Yeah.
And so we're in this odd situation where the short answer, this is a long answer actually, but let's summarize as saying, what do I most believe personally is probably something like that severe recession scenario, but the net impact to the bank might look like the adverse, the medium recession mm-hmm. scenario, because of all the mitigating actions. We know the government can't afford to take away all impacts. We wouldn't want to pay to make this just feel like ordinary times. It's too much money.
Right.
But maybe they can mitigate it back to kind of a mediocre recession instead of severe. Mm-hmm. That's what we're hoping. We'll see what happens.
Wow. Exactly. I mean, yeah. That's the whole crux of the thing is, like, we don't know. I mean, it's just this uncertainty of this, because usually when we go through like a natural disaster or some sort of crisis, like there's a beginning and there's an ending, you know, there's a beginning, a middle, and an ending. We can kind of forecast that type of stuff. With this thing, there's no, I mean, it's being written right before our eyes, you know, and we're just kind of almost improvising, right?
The only other natural disaster data that's in our bank data is stuff like Hurricane Katrina. You know, and you think about it, you can see the hurricane coming.
Yeah.
You know where it's going to hit.
Right.
It's, as you said, it's geographically isolated and temporally isolated. And we have neither of those this time.
Mm-mm.
So I wrote, not only do we refresh our economic forecasts every week, but I wind up writing an article every week. And this week's article was hope for a sprint, prepare for a marathon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, we hope that this is tamped out in a month to 2 months, let's say 2 months, to be honest.
Yeah.
And we hope that with reasonable actions, we can keep it at a low level through the rest of the year, and that those reasonable actions means the economy comes back some. But in banking, you don't do things based on hope. You have to plan for what could happen, mm-hmm. and that's operational planning, collections planning, pricing, stress testing like mm-hmm. we do, CECL, all the rest. So yeah, you've got to know what it could be because we can't see the end.
Right. You plan, what's the old saying, plan for the worst, hope for the best and plan for the worst. So no truer is that than now. So for sure. So, I mean, is there any way that this can be lessened? I mean, obviously like what you guys are doing in New Mexico, I mean, you guys are very proactive on this, and even Singapore, very proactive on this type of stuff. And that seems to be kind of like, if there is one, a magic bullet, if you got to be ultra, ultra, uber proactive in this to keep it at bay or best you can. That's based on what you just said, that seems to be the scenario here, is being proactive.
Yeah, so this is a perfect time to invent that time machine, go back 6 to 8 weeks, and start testing everybody who gets off an airplane.
Yeah.
That might sound like a joke, but Taiwan is an excellent case in how to do things right, which is that as soon as they heard about the outbreak in China, Taiwan and China are heavily connected in terms of air travel and business ties and the rest. But there was no major outbreak in Taiwan, not at all, because they remember SARS and other outbreaks. And so literally, nobody got off a plane until they had entered the plane and started doing immediate health checks.
Wow.
And then monitored people. You just got off a plane from China, so we're monitoring your actions for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. Very proactive. It's sad to say, but we've kind of done the opposite. We have to admit that. We have not been proactive, except in little isolated places.
Yeah.
Like New Mexico, 1.5 million people. It's essentially a big, we've got everything going for us, right? Low population density.
Yeah, yeah.
We were proactive, relatively low interconnectedness to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we've slowed it down. There's so many things about the US that are not China. People look at China and say, well, they beat this in 8 weeks, so we can too. It's like, no, I have friends who've lived through this in China, and their version of lockdown is literal lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
It's house arrest. You can't leave any, I mean, they've loosened this now, but to get it under control, you couldn't leave any apartment complex without talking to the guard at the door, getting a health check, mm-hmm. getting a permission slip on mm-hmm. where you were headed,
mm-hmm.
and at every major intersection is a policeman who's asking for your papers.
Wow. Yeah, that wouldn't happen here, but it might.
and they stopped all interstate travel, the equivalent of our states. I mean, imagine police barricades on every highway between every state. And they had, most importantly, they had one epicenter. They had Hubei.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ring-fence Hubei. They do Taiwan-style tracking on everywhere else with complete lockdown on the rest of the country. My friends are 1,000 kilometers from Hubei, and yet within 2 weeks, they were on lockdown.
Good grief.
So China did what we never could and far beyond what we are now. So that's why we're not following their trajectory,
right?
The China. Another example, and kind of an opposite example, is Belarus. And they're notable in Europe because they haven't done any lockdown. Everything is open for business fully. What they do is screening people, everybody who comes into the country from outside. They monitor, they're supposed to be self-quarantined, if any, and they test them all the moment they arrive.
Right.
If any of the tests come back positive, then they do first and second order contact tracing. But inside the country, it's business as usual for the simple reason that they can't afford it. There will be no bailout program. There will be no paychecks in the mail in Belarus. Their president said, if you don't work, how will you pay for your families?
Right.
Sure. So they are doing what they can do, the only thing they can do.
Mm-hmm.
So what we can do now is be even more vigilant. We've got a, my daughter in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago was invited to an antiviral party.
Oh my gosh.
You hear this on the news? Well, and she wrote to me and said, can you believe this? And I said, no, and I hope you're not there. She said, no, I'm not that stupid.
Right.
Right. Oh. We do have to have people be smarter than that.
Mm-hmm. Only in L.A. That's typical Los Angeles for you. Speaking from somebody who was from there. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, Joseph. This is, thank you so much for those three scenarios. I mean, that just, it really paints a picture and just of what can be what and what we can do to curb it as best we can. So there are ways of doing this. It's just extreme measures. And hopefully we can wrap our heads around that and do something similar to what, you know, China or South Korea, Singapore. I mean, all those are very different places from here. But gosh, if we can adopt some of that stuff over there, we can get this curbed hopefully sooner rather than later. So anything else to wrap up here, Joseph? Any final words of wisdom here? Any advice for folks out there?
Well, the health advice you see on the news every day, and you know, simply take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in contact with people in enough different countries, both ahead of us and behind us, to know that that stuff really does matter. But from a business perspective, yeah, this requires, nobody really planned for it to this extreme. We've had pandemic planning before,
mm-hmm.
and actually, what I learned from the SARS recession was you don't need a pandemic-specific forecast model for the bank. What you need are economic scenarios,
mm-hmm.
because we've got models. But I think the challenge is that the models are now going to overpredict because of what government's doing. So we've got to talk to our auditors and accountants and examiners and say, negative Q factors. You've got to let us dial things down,
yeah.
because of what the government's doing. And we can't fit that in the model. It's never happened before, mm-hmm. not in our data.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always the advocate for models, and I still think you start with the model, but now you've got to use some judgment and get your accountants to go along with it,
right.
and say, here's why it won't be as bad as our best models say it'll be. And that's just how we live through this. That's what it's going to be. And then update those things every week,
yeah.
because the data changes every
yeah.
week.
I mean, changes almost every day or by the hour, it seems like, with this thing. So,
yeah. And for the credit unions, fortunately, they haven't adopted CECL yet. So they don't have to worry about CECL day two. But we also have large lender clients who they did the first quarter CECL adoption. They reported those numbers in the best economy of the last decade or more. The next CECL number is going to be for the worst economy of the last
yeah.
many decades. That transition isn't, it's beyond what our worst case simulations were. We did this replay the last recession, how does CECL change? The worst point to adopt CECL is right at the onset of a recession. And so now your day two, your second quarter analysis under CECL is going to be the worst transition imaginable. And so we're going to see. There's going to be a lot of pain and discussion around that. So we're doing a lot more work on CECL.
No doubt. No doubt. Fasten your seatbelts. We're in for a bumpy ride. So, all right, Joseph. Well, I'll let you get back to it. Enjoy your weather out there. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's good to be working from home, at least in your neck of the woods. It looks wonderful. So So take care, be healthy, and let's check in again maybe in a few weeks and see what the new data is telling us. I'd be really interested to hear.
Be happy to do that. Okay. Yeah, that'd be good.
Thanks again, Joseph. Appreciate the time. Be healthy
Thank
and
you.
Be safe, all right?
Take care.
You too. And...